F2. Number 4A.
Man, but we don't think about a person, either two-legged or not, but that we think about man as I will make the ruler over many. That's what happens with the science. If we are faithful to the seven and the four, to few things, to 11 few things, that makes us ruler over many. Just as if we are faithful to the 1 to 10 and addition, subtraction, multiplication, division, we are made ruler over all calculations. So, this gives us a key in which direction, really, we should work and we should put our heart into science. You see, usually when one speaks with beginners of science, they are always interested in fragmentary problems. How would you think about this, and how would you think about that, and how do you look about this, and how do you look about that? And that's very natural, because at the beginning thought is just startled about any problem. But those problems are infinite in this world. You never get an end to an end. And it's a burden. And that's what happened, you see. That we must see that metaphysics doesn't get a burden on us. That it can keep its simplicity. And we can only keep its simplicity if we turn our thoughts to the fundamentals, to the seven and to the four. That's the key to infinitude. So, I would say, you see, that we should make it a habit, so to say, to, as far as we can, always very tenderly, only as far as we can, to make a habit to put our heart into the contemplation and pondering of the few things which make us ruler over many things. So I would say to you that I'm sure that each one of you comes here and has left perhaps at home quite a few problems. Some of them have perhaps taken the problems with them. It's not so easy to leave them at home. And each one may have lots of problems. I would say, let them go. Take the 11. Be faithful just for this week and try to be faithful over a few things. And let that carry the many things and solve the many things. If you seek the kingdom of heaven, well, all these things will be added unto you. So let's not think of all these things. Let's think of the kingdom of heaven, the system of being, the seven and the four. You know, I can think back when I was quite a boy. My mother, who was a Christian Scientist already at that time, very fine Christian Scientist, still is and still more is. She didn't teach me Christian Science. She lived it. And the very few things which she taught me, very few things, practically nothing until I began to study the textbook myself long time afterwards. One thing was this, and I tell you what it is, a little story, and we will remember that story all through the week. It's the story of big soul when he lost the father's asses. You call him Soul, yes. Soul became afterwards King Soul. Well, that story has never left me. What is the story? The story is that Soul's father lost some of his asses. Asses are a symbol of a burdened sense. For burdened sense, the ass is an animal that carries the burden. And we can make up our mind if we want to be an ass or not. Well, if you have carried the problems with you here, you are one. I can't help it. And the father said to young Saul, who was a big man, he was higher than any of the people. He had a high consciousness, not high enough to compete with David, but he had a high consciousness. He went to seek the asses and didn't find them. And so they turned to the prophet Samuel. That's the only thing we can do if we have asses. That we turn not to the asses, but turn to the prophet. That we don't seek the burden sense, but that we turn to the prophet, where the spiritual sense of things appear. So leave the prophets alone. You can't change them. The only thing that can change a problem is God, it's the prophet. And they turned to the prophet Samuel, and the Samuel didn't say to him, I show you where you can find your asses. He didn't solve for him his asses, his problems. He said to him, I make thee captain over Israel. I make thee king over the whole country. But if you possess the whole country, you have all the asses in it. You have everything. You don't need to seek them anymore. See? And then when he made him king, the asses were found, because it was in his kingdom. They were not outside his kingdom. That's what we should do in science. We shouldn't go and run after the asses and try to have a lot of burden things, a lot of problems, and say, now I'm going to solve this problem. And then when it is solved, you can be quite sure that you lose again an ass. You have to solve another problem. And it never ends. And it never ends. But I tell you how it ends, that you don't ever have a problem. I sometimes think I have never a problem. Seek the kingdom. Take the kingdom. Take all. Take the whole. In that whole, everything is included. You don't need to run after fragmentary ideas. The Christian scientist first runs after the fragmentary idea health. Then, when he has done that, then he runs after fragmentary idea supply. I think if he has those two, he's quite happy. But the divine Christ doesn't give him any peace. He certainly makes him send more problems until he gets awake to the fact that he has to seek for Christ and not fragmentary ideas. So if you really want to have a life which is free and big and wide, go and take the kingdom. Take the all. The all is the seven and the four. That seven and the four, that includes all calculations within the realm of divine science. Just as the ten and the four in arithmetic includes the whole calculations of arithmetic. That's the secret. I gave it away. You see, we have a textbook. It's a funny thing about the textbook. We may read that textbook and never know what is in it. The Christian scientists, most of them read the textbook. And that which they are really interested in is something which isn't in the textbook. They are interested in, what shall I think when I have rheumatism? What shall I think if I have a case of cancer? What shall I think if somebody has lost his business? What shall I think when somebody is cross with her husband, doesn't get along with her husband? What shall I do when this? What shall I do when that? What shall I do when this and that and the other? So it goes on. Has the textbook any answer to one of these questions in it? Not a single one. The textbook is no book, no recipe book. It doesn't give you for the 1,000 problems that you meet in a year, 1,000 answers. It doesn't. It just gives you always one answer. Namely that she says there is only one principle, which heals sin and sickness. There's one principle. Can you see the simplicity of what science is, when you've got science? It's enormous, the marvel of science. I wonder since years and years, every day, about the marvel of a science. Just the marvel of a science. It's a marvel. The only thing we have to be watchful that we don't deviate from it, that we don't run after the answers the next morning, that we stay with our kingship, that we stay and say, I have the whole, I'm king of Israel, I'm king of the whole realm, and within that whole realm everything fits in, has its proper place, has its proper solution, has its proper means and everything. You take the kingdom. That's why in this few examples, you could see the true priesthood and the true kingship, and right from the beginning of the Bible, it has been promised to us that men should be king and priest unto God. He has never said that we should be an ass driver. Never. We have never degraded to that point. Well, that's what Mary saw. See, Mary saw, she said, my soul does magnify the Lord. She hasn't said, as we may say, my soul magnifies the idea of health. My soul magnifies the idea of supply. My soul magnifies the idea of relationship. She said, my soul magnifies the Lord, the whole. And what came back to her was that it was said, and from now on, all generations shall call you blessed. The whole world, the whole realm blesses us then. Never take a little when you can take more. Never. Never. In spiritual science, there is no modesty. In human life, there is humility. But in spiritual science, you have to take God as he is, and he is big. And if we take God as what he is not, namely as small, we go against the law of God. And that's no humility. That's just foolishness. Yes. So you see, what we really have always to concentrate on is that we really take the root of things and not the branches and not the leaves. You know how always somehow in the Bible those many, many parables and so on, they always show how the root of a plant is that which is necessary, how the seed of everything is necessary. That if we have the seed of a mustard tree, well, we have the whole tree. And the mustard seed tree, the mustard tree is a big tree with a lot of branches, with a lot of leaves. I tell you another story. I read it in a Reader's Digest. And it should be a joke, but I didn't see any joke in it. It made me so perplexed that it never left me. It's that little story where a school teacher says to little Johnny, says, now Johnny, tell me, What are two bananas and two bananas? And little Johnny didn't know. So he asked, she asked Johnny again after 5 minutes and said, now tell me, Johnny, what are two bananas and what are two bananas? He just didn't know. So he said, all right, I'll leave you for a quarter of an hour and I come back and you will tell me, you know. But he came back and he didn't know what two bananas and two bananas were. So she said, well, Johnny, I just can't understand it. Because yesterday I asked you what two keepers and two keepers were, and you said four keepers. So Johnny looked at her and said, oh, you mean keepers. It's not very funny, but that's what we all do. That's what metaphysically we all do. Metaphysically, we are at one time just interested in keepers. That is, we are just interested how to get healed of our tummy ache. Huh? The next time we are just interested, all that we are interested in, how we get out of a bad business. The next thing we are interested in is, how can we have a better relationship with this and that? And so we are interested in keepers, and then perhaps afterwards in bananas, and then perhaps afterwards in elephants. But what we really should be interested in is 2 and 2 = 4. Well, it doesn't matter if they are bananas, and it doesn't matter if they are keepers, and it doesn't matter if they are elephants. If little Johnny would have been interested in 2 and 2, that is, in the science of addition, he would have known all the answers. But because he was interested in the symbol of it, in the specific case of it, in the specific application of it, and that all was what was his interest, he didn't know the science behind it, and so he was stuck. You say stuck? When the next problem came along, you see. Now, that's what we should remember. See, that's what we should remember. We should remember, and you just analyze yourself, you analyze your friend, you analyze all the people you know who are interested in Christian science, and ask yourself, isn't that so? Isn't that so? They are interested in recipes, but not in the science of it. So, whenever we go next week through the epistle and we come to such fundamental questions, I might refer to the keepers and to the bananas. And then you know exactly what I mean with it. Well, I have another quarter of an hour. So, another point about science. You see, we have seen that science is that marvel in any subject which can reduce the infinite to simplicity without losing the infinitude of the subject. Now, how do we get the infinitude of the subject back? Let's take arithmetic. We get the infinitude of the subject back by combining the 7 and the 4 in its infinite way. We can combine, in arithmetic, naturally the 10 and the 4. We can combine all the numbers and combine them as addition, as subtraction, division, and so on. And so we gain back, so to say, the infinite realm of arithmetic. So we start really in arithmetic with the infinitude, analyze it into its constituents of the 10 and the 4, and afterwards combine it again and come back to the infinitude again. So we end really there where we began. But the difference is that at the end we understand the beginning. We understand the one. Now in metaphysics you see that so often. You see that people say, what do you want more? There is only the infinite one, and there is only the infinite all, and besides that all, there is nothing else. And it's true, you can't deny it, but it doesn't mean a thing. It just doesn't mean, it just means as little as when the teacher says to a little boy, you know, arithmetic includes all calculations. Well, that's true, but he doesn't know how to calculate. The infinite doesn't mean a thing to him. It's just a bland statement. But when he teaches him arithmetic and shows him how to calculate again, then the infinite calculation means something to him. And so it is in science, in metaphysics. So we also start from the fact, from the absolute fact, that God is one, and it's the infinite and the infinite whole, and that it's the one and only, and there is no God besides God. But then we begin to analyze this infinite one into its constituents, as the seven and the four. But we can't leave it there. Then we must do the same as the little boy. We must know the calculation. We must begin to calculate. That is, we must begin to combine in all ways and means the seven and the four. And by combining the seven and the four, we regain, so to say, the infinite one. But then we know what it is. We know the infinite one. So if we say, yes, there is only the infinite one, we mean something very different than if just some sentimental metaphysician says, there is only the infinite one. It's the same statement, but it means completely something different. So, you know that therefore we must, so to say, calculate these ideas. You know how Mrs. Eddy says at the end of the seventh day of creation, she says that the 7 days reveal the divine infinite calculus. And that's how she ends the explication of Genesis. That these 7 days that thought accepts the divine infinite calculus. Now, she also says in miscellaneous writings something, she says, Christian science is the infinite calculus, defining the line, plane, space, and fourth dimension of spirit. There, at that time, was quite early in her writings, she defined the word Christ, Christianity, and science as the line, plane, space, and fourth dimension of spirit. So, we must see that we begin get into the habit of calculating with these ideas. Calculus means that it is reasoning by the use of symbols. Well, our symbols, our highest symbols which we have are mind, spirit, soul, principle, life, truth, and love, word, Christ, Christianity, and science. These are symbols. They are the highest, abstractest symbols we know. They are higher symbols than the seas and the water and the mountains and the trees and the astros and so on. The highest symbols today we have in order to symbolize being are these seven synonymous terms and the four sides of the city. Therefore, I feel that the highest statement that Jesus ever made may have been when he said, I and my Father are one. But he said, the time will come when he will do greater works and when I will send you the Comforter. And I think the highest, biggest statement that ever was made in the world was Mrs. Eddy's definition of God, when she defined God through the four and the seven as the incorporeal, divine, supreme, infinite, mind, spirit, soul, principle, life, truth, and love. I don't think there is a higher, more embracing statement in the world than this. It's much more embracing than to say God is all. Because God is all doesn't mean a thing. Not a thing. Everyone can comprehend, can think about these terms, what he wants. Everyone, when he says God is all, he can know, he can think under all, well, God is all, therefore God is the trees and the plants and the ants and the rats and everything. So only through the analysis of the all, through the seven and the four, one can define the allness of God in such a way that there is no mistake about it. And therefore I think the greatest statement that ever was made up to now in the world was that definition of God as the four and the seven. So we must begin to calculate with these symbols. And we do that, as you know, that we combine the seven with the seven. We combine mind with mind, and mind with spirit, and mind with soul, and the ideas of mind with the ideas of principle and life, truth and love. We call it the seven seven. See, just what you would do if you combine the three and the four, and the three and the five, and the three and the seven, and the three and the eight. But because this calculus is infinite, you can combine them also, the seven with the four, and you have the four orders. We have the seven in the order of the world as mind, spirit, soul, principle, life, truth and love, which means something entirely different than if you combine them in the Christ order as principle, life, truth and love, soul, spirit, mind, and so on. Or you can combine the four with the four, something which is very natural. You can combine the Word with the Word, and the Word with the Christ, the Word with Christianity, just as natural. It isn't something supernatural. In mathematics, you combine addition with subtraction with division. You combine, say, the fraction one-third, which is a division, and combine it with an addition, one-third plus three-fifths. That's a combination of a division with an addition. In mathematics, you all do these things very naturally. But because the world has known that since hundreds of years, it takes it naturally. But we come to a new period, a new era in spiritual science, where for the first time the science of spirit comes to birth, and therefore because not everybody for donkey's ages have done this divine calculation, we think it's something very special and very, very highfalutin and something very strange. It isn't. It is a simple thing. In the human, we do it all over. And you know, in the negative, we do it day in and day out. In the negative, we just combine the negatives from morning to night if you are not watchful. There, we don't think it's strange. It's something special, something very intellectual. But when it comes to the culture of ideas and the combination and the calculus of ideas, because we are not used to it, because it's new, we have to break within our consciousness the resistance to it and see that it is not something strange, that it's something completely natural. Then if we can do that within ourselves and just see that it is the most natural thing on earth, then we do a job. And there is no resistance within our consciousness, then we accept it lovingly, then we can be a mother to it, then we can give it birth, then it becomes warm and tender and natural and everything. So you can see why many people have begun to study in the line we do, that after a while that they have studied the synonyms and so on, they say, oh, this is intellectual, this is cold, this is abstract, it's very interesting, but it doesn't touch me. Yes, why not? They only do it from the point of view of mind. They don't love it. Can never get warm. Can never get tender. Can never unfold. That's quite natural. That's why we must see that we take the whole world, that we go the way of the world, and don't hold at the intellectual investigation of the subject. It's a beauty behind it. And that's why I wanted to show you the beauty of a science. the marvel of a science. The marvel of a science. Because I feel that when I can show you the beauty of it, the marvel of it, that then one begins to love it. And then one begins to think, that's worth it. That's worthwhile taking it. That's worthwhile devoting oneself to it. That's worthwhile consecrating one's life to it. And then you can be sure that it is warm and near and lovely and it has everything that is worthwhile.